are you with Truth News Radio Australia on the 7th of June 2014. It's great to have you company. My name's Hereward Fenton and I'll be with you for the next 2 hours. We'll be going through some Australian news, some international news, and we will be having an interview in the second hour with a man who is perhaps one of Australia's first political prisoners under draconian laws that were drafted a few years ago to prevent what is termed hate speech. The man is named Brendan O'Connell, and he was locked up for the maximum 3-year term with no parole after engaging in YouTube activism and confronting a man in Perth, Western Australia, over the subject of Israel and the treatment of the Palestinian people by the Israeli government. Brendan O'Connell describes himself as an activist, and at the time he was very upset about what he had learned and what he'd read about what has happened in the occupied territories of Israel. He has some complaints about Jewish people generally, and of course this is based on his interpretation of the fact that there is a kind of embargo on criticizing Israel or Jewish people because of the Holocaust and because of the accusation that this would be anti-Semitism. Now, this is a difficult and delicate situation to deal with because, indeed, there are people who engage in hate speech. There are people who hate Jews. And there is a lot of aggression, and that is not a good thing. I'm certainly not supporting any of that, and I'm very much against it. I'm very much against racism. And from what I understand, so is Brendan O'Connell. He is actually not engaging in racism or hate speech, according to his understanding. But what he sees himself as confronting is a protection racket that's been set up to prevent criticism of one group of people in our society. And this group of people in our society is tied to the nation state of Israel. And again, that the policies of that country are immune from criticism for the same reasons. That if you do, you're anti-Semitic. If you do, you're not acknowledging the right of Israel to exist, and that hints that you are a Nazi. And of course, that all hints back to the Holocaust. Now, Brendan O'Connell has views of history which some may find extreme. Some people may say, well, he's completely wrong. But Brendan has questions about the Holocaust. He feels, based on his research, that we have incorrect information about that. Let's just put it at that, leave it at that. And I'm not going to say here that he's right or wrong in those views. But again, I don't believe it's right that anyone should be criminally prosecuted simply because of a view they may have of what happened in history. But I know we already have the precedent for that in Europe, where people who question the Holocaust can actually be thrown in prison. Again, I think that's completely wrong. You see, the essence of a democracy is free speech. And I do understand laws against hate speech. I do understand why we may need some protections against hate speech. But let's be very clear what hate speech actually consists of. Hate speech is inciting violence. So if I were to get on the radio and say, you know, such and such a group of people are terrible, despicable, worthless human beings, and you should go and burn down their houses, that would be hate speech. And I think it's actually reasonable to have laws to prevent that type of activity. because that will actually incite crime, and that is part of the continuum that leads to crime. So I'm not necessarily against the laws against hate speech themselves, but what we see is in the application of these laws, it becomes ridiculous. They become twisted around so they can simply be used as a weapon to silence dissent. And this, my friends, this is the problem with the heavy-handed nanny state. It's not that the ideas and the concepts that they put in place are wrong. It's the interpretation, it's the application of what they're doing that often goes awry. And of course, when you challenge these laws, you can be accused of supporting some terrible thing. You know, you're for hate speech. You think hate speech is good because you're against the laws against hate speech. We get involved in these ridiculous dialogues that go nowhere, partly because the state has become bloated with its own power. And while becoming bloated with its own power, it has been heavily influenced and controlled and taken over by interests that actually have nothing to do with the function of government in its basic definition, which is basically, you know, the management of society, basically just a function of human civil society. Instead, what government has become is a function of the interests of power groups in society. It has become an arm of the way power groups in society fulfill their ambitions and carry out their agendas. And those power groups can be all kinds of different entities. Most commonly, it's large corporations. So the government is essentially an arm of these large corporations in much of what it does. There is so much money that changes hands between the government and these corporations that you can no longer separate the corporation from the government in actual functional terms. You can separate them in terms of looking at the individuals concerned, looking at the offices and the buildings and the places of where people work, and you say, well, that's a company and that's the government, and you can think that, well, they're separate. But then you look at what's going on and you find they're not. Now, the same thing applies to geopolitics, because the interests of other countries, the interests of very, very powerful geopolitical forces in the world influence government policies. And of course, getting back to the Israel question, the policies of Israel, the influence of Israel is felt very, very strongly in Australia, and that very, very strongly influences the government of the day. And it has no difference, makes no difference what political persuasion that party is. As we've seen in the last few years, you look at the Gillard government, compare it to Tony Abbott's government, compare that to the previous Howard regime, and look at their specific policies towards Israel. Absolute continuum. No variation whatsoever. Sometimes a little nuance. I mean, let's hand it to Julia Gillard. She did have a bit of a nuance there with Israel when she allowed the Australian Federal Police to visit Israel to complain about Mossad manufacturing passports. But that was probably not directly under her control. And of course, the way in which the government of the day has dealt with Israeli incursions into Gaza has always been incredibly, you know, stand back, don't criticize, occasionally sort of make some statements that are a little bit cautious, but never overtly criticize. So this is the type of problem that we are confronting in our society. And Brendan O'Connell is a man who really took this problem head on and decided to confront people publicly about it. I think perhaps he went too far. I think he's a little harsh. And I think there is too much anger in the way he expressed himself. But for this to have led to his imprisonment is an outrage. And I do stand by him in that sense. So in the second hour, he will be coming on and we're going to have a really interesting discussion about the whole Israel question and some of the other historical questions that Brendan has. So it's going to be very, very interesting indeed. In the meantime, we're going to be moving on with some Australian news. And I've got a very, very important story to tell you today. This is from Nine News. A five-year-old girl has received a confidential multi-million dollar payout from pharmaceutical manufacturer CSL Limited and the state of Western Australia after becoming severely disabled from a flu vaccination. Saba Button got the vaccination under a government-promoted scheme in April 2010 when a GP injected a 0.25 ml dose of 2010 Fluvax into her left arm, and that is the Fluvax manufactured by CSL. As a consequence of the vaccination, she suffered a hypoxic brain injury and severe disabilities. Her life expectancy has been significantly shortened, and she will require constant care for the rest of her life. Days after she was vaccinated, and dozens of other adverse reactions in children were reported, the state government suspended its seasonal flu vaccination program. The Buttons said the settlement, which media reports was in the order of several million dollars, was a huge relief. CSL denied liability and claimed that the state of Western Australia and the state's health minister were responsible for any compensation due. CSL also cross-claimed against the state and the minister for a contribution in the event its defence were to fail. The claim and the cross-claim were privately mediated, resulting in all parties reaching a settlement. Now, folks, this is an extremely important case. And there's a few points that I would like to emphasise in all of this. Firstly, and this is the most disturbing of all, is that in all this talk about the case, no one's talking about the problem, which is really the most important thing, the problem of the flu vaccine, the problem of vaccines generally. I mean, they're not even addressing it. I've got another article here from the ABC, which I'll read out to you when we come back from the break. And again, it goes over the same territory. It's a bit more information, but there's no interest in what is this problem with the Fluvax vaccine. And it turns out that the vaccine is still being given to people, or to children, in the current year, a different version each year. But in that year, they banned it only for children under five, which really is quite ridiculous. We're going to break. We'll be right back. Don't go away.
Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
Welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio Australia. It's a great pleasure and a great honour to be talking to you today about things that are very, very important. Things that are not properly aired in the media, and that's why we do this show. That's why I've been doing this show now for more than 5 years. And during that time, I have never asked a cent from any of my listeners. We have been delivering show after show completely out of my own pocket, and there has been a lot of time invested and a lot of costs. And I'm proud of that, and I'm very pleased that I've been able to do that for so long. However, I have reached a point now where I want to make the show better. I want to improve what we do. I want to reach more people, and I want to have more variety in the way we do our media. I would like to move to video. I would certainly like to be doing video interviews, which most radio shows do anyway these days, but there are costs involved. There are a lot of setup costs for that, a lot of studio sort of setup, cameras, etc., that actually makes it prohibitive for me to do that at the moment. There are many, many other things that could be done if we did have a cash flow. So on that note, I would like to announce that we now have a subscription service running on truthnews.com.au. If you go to the website, you'll see on the main page the ability to subscribe to Truth News Australia. You can subscribe either on a monthly basis or on a yearly basis. And if you subscribe on a yearly basis, you will receive our unique Truth News Australia t-shirt as part of the yearly cost. Now, that yearly subscription is $65 Australian currency. There is an additional charge for postage, which depends on your location. But you will be receiving the t-shirt and a resource DVD, which will be mailed out to you wherever you may be. And that DVD contains a whole bunch of resources which you might find useful as an info warrior. Also, we will over time be adding more content to the subscribers-only sections of the website. And I've also created a subscribers-only forum, which is a private forum which you can visit to share information in a confidential way with other subscribers, which I think is actually quite useful. So I do encourage you to think about becoming a subscriber and to think about why you might do that. Because the show that you're listening to is the product of a lot of work. And work has to be ultimately rewarded, otherwise it cannot continue. There's a basic economic principle there in place. I will continue the show regardless, but for the show to evolve, for the show to develop, there needs to be this mechanism for the show to be able to generate a cash flow. And who knows how big we could make it? Who knows how big it could get? We have to start somewhere. So as I said, for 5 years, actually more than 5 years, we've been doing this show, and that's a demonstration of the seriousness and the earnestness with which I go about doing this. So it's up to you. If you would like to make Truth News Australia something better, something bigger, if you'd like to support it, if you'd like to show your support for what we have done over the years, now is the opportunity for everyone listening to do so. You can either subscribe on a monthly or a yearly basis. I leave it in your hands, and I will continue now with our Australian news. And specifically, I would like to talk about the amazing news about the settlement in the baby flu vaccination case. And I'm going to play to you first a clip from Channel 9, which outlines some of the details in the case.
A multi-million dollar medical negligence payment has been awarded to the family of a 5-year-old Perth girl who was severely disabled after a flu vaccination. Saba Button successfully sued the manufacturer and the West Australian government for failing to give warnings. More from Karen Huff.
Saba Button was a healthy 11-month-old who went downhill rapidly after having the CSL flu vax shot in 2010.
It could have been anyone's family or anyone's child. We're just a normal family, so this could have happened to anyone.
She ended up in intensive care, her parents preparing for the worst. Saba made it through, but now at five needs constant care, has no speech and can't walk. Her life expectancy has been shortened, her disabilities profound and permanent. A confidential settlement was accepted by the federal court today. More than $10 million for future care and legal costs was the estimated figure. Saba's parents sued pharmaceutical manufacturer CSL Limited and the West Australian government and the health minister. CSL denied liability, claiming the government was responsible for compensation, but mediation settled the matter. Over 100 children had presented to the Princess Margaret Hospital with adverse jab reactions that flu season, but it had not been passed on to the public.
Let me just pause it there. Let's again talk about this question of the denial of liability. This, of course, is written into law. This is actually under the terms of which the large pharmaceutical companies operate in Australia, and specifically in relation to vaccines. They have set up a scenario where they are immune from liability, or somewhat immune. This itself is a situation that is untenable. This has to change. This is corrupt in itself. You see, they manufacture the product. They have to be liable for defects in the product. When you have a situation where you've got a company manufacturing a product, supplying it to government under the terms that they are not liable for the defects in the product, that is just unbelievably corrupt in its basic essence. And this is something that we need to communicate, that we need to become very active about, to change those laws. Because once those laws are changed, there could be a kind of a domino effect, a cascade of effects. Because once the companies become liable for their defective product, then there will be a spur on them to make sure that they don't sell defective products. Let's just continue with the rest of this story.
Authorities have been criticised for not acting quickly to advise GPs of the problems or identifying there was an issue. It wasn't until Saba was in intensive care that the product was recalled. It led to a nationwide suspension of Fluvax for children under five. Saba was about to celebrate her first birthday when she was injured.
Okay, again, a few comments on that. Firstly, the refusal to report the problems. Again, I think it's actually all connected back to the financial relationship that the pharmaceutical companies have with the government, and then the pressure on the government being that if there are adverse reactions, the government is actually liable. That then trickles down to clinics and hospitals, particularly hospitals. And remember, most of these children are brought to hospitals, which are probably public hospitals. And then the pressure on the hospital becomes to minimise reports of adverse reactions in vaccines. Again, that's protecting government revenue, isn't it? And I've heard many stories, and there have been many, many anecdotal stories, of children have been taken to hospital, and it's like from the doctors to the nurses, the entire staff refuses to acknowledge that there's a problem here. I mean, the baby will be convulsing, the baby will have a high fever, and the parents will be telling the emergency staff that this all started after the vaccine. She got her jab, suddenly she got a high temperature and started convulsing. And you know what they get told? They get told, oh, that's just normal for children. Oh, all children convulse, all little babies convulse when they have high temperatures. This is just a normal childhood thing. Go home. Honestly, this has happened in dozens, hundreds of cases. I don't know how many. It's really, really, really scary, folks. With Truth News Radio Australia, we're going to break. I'll be continuing on this topic when we come back. Do go. Thank you. welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. It's great to be with you today. I'm talking about vaccines. I'm talking about the amazing news from Western Australia of a settlement in a vaccination injury case. Saba Button, who was permanently injured, brain damaged from the Fluvax vaccine in 2010. And one aspect of this that I was highlighting there before the break is the way in which healthcare professionals refuse to acknowledge that there is a problem. And you have to conclude that they are protecting the interests of the government and then, by extension, the pharmaceutical industry by refusing to acknowledge when a child is injured by a vaccine. I'm sure the people concerned would be horrified if they heard me saying this, because they feel, they believe that what they're doing is caring for people. They believe that's their job. But what actually happens in institutions, and hospitals are just large institutions, is that there is a way of shaping people's thinking, shaping people's behaviour, and it is used. It is used on various policy levels all the way down from the top. And, you know, one day we're going to get people on the show who are going to tell us about this. But I know how this sort of thing is done. I mean, you have a meeting and the meeting is convened with an agenda we've got to deal with. How do we deal with these parents who come in complaining about problems that aren't real with their children, you know? And, of course, that does really happen. You know, some parents are overly zealous, are overly reactive to any little problem that happens with their child, and they rush to the hospital. It is a problem. And hospital staff have to know how to differentiate what is a real problem from what is just an overly reactive parent trying to rescue their child from a non-existent problem. And, of course, it's believed that vaccines are totally safe. Everyone's been told that vaccines are totally safe. So when a parent comes in saying that my child got the shot and then suddenly got sick, the tendency will be to think that there's something wrong with the parent, that they're making it up, they're imagining things. And see, this is created, it's a type of cognitive dissonance that's created because of the massive amount of controlling, programming and brainwashing that takes place through the propaganda, the PR industry of vaccines. And it affects everyone. It affects everyone from the nurse right up to the GP to the specialist. They can't believe there could be a problem with a vaccine. And so in the case of the Fluvax vaccine in 2010, which had caused massive problems all over the country, it wasn't getting reported. People were bringing in the reports. The parents were bringing their children in, but they were being told to go home. Shut up. There's nothing wrong here. I mean, this is an indication of where our society is at, folks. And we're talking here about trained professionals. We're talking here about people who've been through a degree that's 5 years, 6 years long, in the case of doctors, in the case of specialists, you know, another 3 or 4 years. But despite all that, despite all this training, people are just behaving in this groupthink, mind-controlled fashion. Now, let's just move on to talk about the next aspect of this, which is incredibly worrisome, which is that even after it was finally acknowledged that there was a problem here, the extent of the problem was minimized. And as they said in the news report, the vaccine was suspended for children under 5. Now, how ludicrous is that, folks? I mean, what really, is there such a huge difference between a 4-year-old and a 5-year-old in terms of their sensitivity, in terms of their susceptibility? I mean, obviously there's a problem in the vaccine, huh, right? So merely restricting it to children under 5 is, it's just an abomination, folks. The fact that they went on even after they knew there was a problem, they went on delivering the vaccine. Again, I think protecting financial interests. A lot of money had been invested in this vaccine. The government could not afford to acknowledge that there was a serious problem here. But see, now it's happened. Now the government has to acknowledge that there was a serious problem here. And we know this case is merely one of hundreds, perhaps thousands. We don't know how many. Because we don't know how many people were simply turned away. And we don't know really about the more subtle effects. The ones that are not totally obvious, as in the case of Cyber Button. We don't know about maybe the lower level effects that are still quite serious. This should be the beginning of a flood of lawsuits. We'll see what happens. But there is yet another aspect of this that I want to talk about, which is perhaps the most important thing of all. And that is the lack of discussion of the problems with vaccines generally, and this one in particular. I mean, I've got another article here from the ABC. This was published yesterday on the 6th of June. Settlement for Cyber Button, severely disabled by flu vaccine. Now, you'd think from the headline there that we're going to find out more about why this vaccine disabled her and what the problem is and what they're doing about it to prevent that ever happening again. But you read the whole article and you will not find one hint that they even care about the underlying problem, that they're doing anything to prevent it happening again. The whole article is just about, oh, the financial settlement, oh, and who was liable, oh, and of course this little girl's a vegetable. As if it were just an act of God, as if a lightning bolt just came down and struck this little girl. Nothing we can do about it, it's just, you know, it happens. Let's read the article. The family of a West Australian child left severely disabled after receiving a flu jab has reached a settlement with the vaccine's manufacturer and the state government. Cyber Button suffered brain and organ damage after getting the FluVax shot when she was 11 months old in 2010. And as we said there in the earlier article, CSL claimed her parents launched legal action in the federal court against CSL, and CSL cross-claimed. Now, just moving down through the article here, problems with flu vaccine sparked national ban. In his judgment, Justice Barker said Saba had suffered hypoxic brain injury and consequential severe disabilities. Her life expectancy has been significantly shortened. Her disabilities are profound and permanent. Now, it says here, hundreds of children suffered adverse reactions after they were given the flu shot in 2010, with many of them taken to hospital. It led to an Australia-wide suspension of the vaccination for children under five. Authorities were criticised for not acting quickly enough to advise GPs of the problems or identifying that there was an issue. An independent report compiled by a former chief medical officer criticised both Commonwealth and state health authorities for the way they dealt with the incident. But as you can see, no one seems to know or show any interest as to what the cause of this problem was. And wouldn't you like to know exactly how many children were affected? I mean, it says here hundreds of adverse reports. That's usually the tip of the iceberg. We really just don't know. We don't know how serious this problem is, but we know that it's serious. So hopefully this case will be a precedent that will unleash the flood, that the dam will burst. Of course, if that happens, it's going to bankrupt the government, folks. And they're going to do anything they can to prevent that. And of course, if the government did get bankrupted, we'd all be punished for that as well. You know, there'd be austerity measures we'd be brought in. It's a very, very messed up situation. With Truth News Radio Australia, we'll be right back with more news and analysis after this break. Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. Do check us out on the internet. Do have a look at our website. And do subscribe if you feel that you think we need support, which we do indeed. And if you feel you'd like to support us, you now have the opportunity to do so through our website, truthnews.com.au. There's a big banner on there that you can click on, and you can go to the subscribe page, and you can subscribe either as a monthly or a yearly subscriber. For some reason, I'm having trouble saying that word today, subscribe. You can subscribe either as a monthly or a yearly subscriber, and if you subscribe as a yearly subscriber, you get our lovely original Truth News Australia t-shirt, which actually has information on the front and the back. On the back of the t-shirt, it has a quote from George Bernard Shaw, which is quite amusing. I believe the quote is, "All great truths begin as blasphemies." Anyway, do check that out if you get a chance. Now, I'm going to move on to talk about another topic that we raised last week, which was the death of an Australian killed by a drone strike in Yemen. There has been some recent news popped up that his family is now demanding answers. I've got an article here from the ABC. "Australian killed in Yemen. Family demands answers on Islamic convert Chris Harvard's death in US drone strike." The parents of an Australian man killed in a US drone strike in Yemen are calling on the federal government to give them a full account of how their son died and what proof they have of his alleged links to Al-Qaeda. Christopher Harvard was killed when a car he was traveling in was hit by a missile fired from a US drone last November. Now, documents obtained under Freedom of Information laws by 730 show Harvard and the joint Australian-New Zealand national killed in the same strike had been on an Australian Federal Police watch list because of their links to the banned Al-Qaeda on the Arabian Peninsula terror group. The documents also reveal that the Muslim convert Harvard was a suspect in the December 2012 Al-Qaeda kidnapping of three Westerners in Yemen. Now, I'm just reading through the article here. Documents reveal what the Australian government knew and when about Harvard's life in Yemen. When news of the drone strike broke in April, Australia's Department of Foreign Affairs said there was no Australian involvement in or prior awareness of the operation. But the documents obtained by 730 show that DFAT sent Foreign Minister Julie Bishop a document about Harvard 4 days before his death on November 19. Referring to Australians facing detention overseas on terrorism-related grounds, the government has obscured much of the document on national security grounds. However, it does reveal that Harvard was assessed by the government as being involved with AQAP, Al-Qaeda on the Arabian Peninsula. Mystery over the death as the government changed stories every week. On November 19, Harvard and Jones were driving in Yemen's east with three AQAP members when their car was blasted apart by a drone-fired missile. Harvard's family say the government first told them he had been killed in a Yemeni government airstrike on a mosque. Later, they were told that he was killed in a car. It was at least a month after he was killed before we knew, said Neil Dorick, who became a father figure to Harvard during his troubled upbringing in Townsville. Chris was collateral damage, and from there the stories just got more and more. They changed the stories every week. They said the coroner was going to ring us and tell us how he was killed. We haven't had that. No death certificate. Every time we ask questions, they just won't answer. They won't give us any explanation whatsoever. I'll play to you a little clip here now from an ABC report.
One of America's deadliest and most controversial weapons in its war against terrorists is the unmanned drone that can strike a target with a Hellfire missile from 8 kilometres. The secretive drone program has reportedly killed more than 3,000 people in Pakistan, Yemen and Somalia, and at least 2 Australians. In November last year, 27-year-old Australian Christopher Harvard was killed by a missile from a drone strike while travelling in the remote east of Yemen, a known Al-Qaeda stronghold. Harvard's family in Queensland know very little about their son's death, and the Australian government has refused to comment on the specifics of his case. Dylan Welch has been investigating the life and violent death of the young Australian and spoke exclusively to his family.
Australia's tropical north is a world away from the turmoil of the Arabian Peninsula. But it was here, in Townsville, that a lost young man called Christopher Harvard found his faith and began a remarkable journey to one of the world's most dangerous places. It was to end in tragedy, as his parents learned from the federal police.
We got the phone call to say that they were coming down, they wanted to see us. Of course, at that stage, we didn't know nothing until they got there about 8 o'clock that night. And that's when we were informed of Chris's death.
And what did they tell you?
That Chris had been killed. We couldn't believe what we were hearing.
Harvard was killed in a US drone attack in Yemen on November 19 last year. His parents remain desperate for answers and feel abandoned by their government.
They said the coroner was going to ring us and tell us how he was killed. We haven't had that, no death certificate. Every time we ask questions, they just won't answer. Won't give us any explanation whatsoever.
Harvard grew up an only child in Townsville after his father died when he was...
Okay, I won't play too much of that. They tend to always emphasise the kind of the emotional side of these stories and how sad it is. But really, it's not just sad. I mean, this is actually a crime that's been committed. These are illegal. This is murder, folks. The US government and the Australian government are involved in assassinations. I mean, how more clear can I make it? How more painfully obvious can it be made that these are murders? This is like what the mafia does. And we all know that that's wrong, right? We know that mafia wars are wrong. And you see, this is just phase one. We're now starting to see more white people killed in these drone strikes. But you have to understand that the drone is a technology that can be used anywhere. It will be used in Australia one day. And we already have unmanned surveillance drones. We have them. But drones equipped with weapons are coming. We have opened the door to normalising extrajudicial murder simply because a shadowy intelligence organisation who never divulges their information, who is protected by law from doing so, and for whom if anyone leaks that information will go to prison for 20 years, simply because they say that's a bad guy. The guy hasn't done anything. He hasn't even broken any law. There's nothing they could actually convict him of. He's just part of this, he's travelling with these people in this group. Oh, that's part of the war on terror. Oh, we can kill him. I mean, this will come to Australia. This will come to our shores. It will not come in the current climate where standard of living is still reasonably good, economics, health isn't too bad, although there's a lot of problems under the surface. But once those problems break through the surface, once there is a turmoil in our society, when, say, a financial collapse occurs, which will then induce social chaos, which will provoke more types of crime, You can bet your bottom dollar that the definitions of what is a terrorist will be expanded. And, you know, if they can launch missiles at people in Yemen, they'll be doing it in Brisbane. It's just a matter of time. It's a matter of the situation and the conditions when the conditions change. Very, very upsetting reality that we have to confront, folks. So we will be continuing to bring the information on this show. I would like to find out more about this particular topic, and I'll do my best to bring that to you. Now, in the second hour of today's show, I have a very controversial interview coming up. Brendan O'Connell, critic of Israel and a critic of Judaism as well, who has been to prison under hate crime legislation, is coming on for the full hour, and we're going to be talking about the whole spectrum of the Israel situation, the way in which criticism of Israel is treated, and the way in which Brendan himself was treated and what happened to him in prison. So it's going to be a very, very interesting hour. And I do hope that you're able to take from it that on this show we will go wherever we need to. A lot of people won't address this topic. A lot of alternative news will not even address this topic, because the lobbies and the interest groups are so powerful that people are scared. I'm not scared, folks. It's ridiculous. We're only talking about information that everyone needs to know. And we're certainly not promoting anything illegal or unlawful. We're going to break. We'll be right back. Do stay with us with Truth News Radio Australia.